On this episode, I'm with the Welsh wizard, a legend, I call him my friend, one of the best to have done it, Shane Williams. And as it's Mental Health Awareness Week, we talk all things mental health, and we talk about our transitions, and we talk about loneliness in retirement. And for those of you interested in finding out more information on mental health, go to mentalhealth.org.uk or Instagram Mental Health Foundation. Enjoy.
This episode is brought to you by Major League Baseball. A lot is going on in the world of sports right now, but don't forget the 2024 baseball season. It's officially here. Some pretty exciting things to look forward to. Can the star-studded Dodgers, can they make the World Series? Can Mookie Betts break my heart again? How about the young Orioles? How about the defending champs, the Rangers, trying to become the first back-to-back champs in over two decades? See how far they'll go. Get in on the action by visiting your local ballpark or any ballpark, or you can just go to MLB.com, tap the banner to learn more. Baseball is something else.
This episode is brought to you by Atlassian. Atlassian software like Jira, Confluence, and Loom help power the collaboration needed for teams to accomplish what would otherwise be impossible alone. Because individually we're great, but together we're so much better. That's why millions of teams around the world, including 75% of the Fortune 500, trust Atlassian software for everything from space exploration and green energy to delivering pizzas and podcasts. Whether you're a team of 2, 200, or 2 million, Atlassian software is built to keep you connected and moving together as one.
Big Jim is wearing his heels, marching around the town to get some thrills. But it's time to go in now, and he's big and red. A shot of black coffee, now he's super dead. He gets lost. I'm a beer dick house. I showed him up some whiskey, and he shoots it's like a boss.
Right, Shane, we're in, mate. How are you? You are looking incredibly well and tanned. I've been following your social media. I know you've been somewhere hot. What have you been up to?
Yeah, this isn't a South Wales tan, let me tell you. I've been on a charity cycle in Alcudia with Velindra Cancer Centre, raising some funds there with them. And lucky enough for me, he's in the late 20s, degrees-wise. And double bonus, raise some money and caught a tan at the same time.
Shane, we talk a little bit about cycling in our passing when we've done a bit of commentary and stuff together, and I would love to be great on a bike. I'm absolutely horrendous. On the Watt bike, humbly, probably one of the best in the world, but yourself, you're pretty good on a bike. How good are you on a bike in terms of, say, like professional, let's that kind of level, where would you put yourself on a bike?
Well, professional, I'd be at the back, I think, Jim, I've got to be honest. Yeah, I'm pretty good on a bike. I do a lot of triathlons and long, 100-mile bike rides for charity, etc. But yeah, when it comes to professional, Jesus, these boys, they're a different gravy. And I think they weigh about 6 stone and they're whacking out 300-400 watts. So I'm nowhere in that league, but it's just something I enjoy. I compete at Ironman level, which means I can stay on a bike for 5-6 hours. I enjoy hills because I've lost a bit of timber since I played. Not that I needed to lose much, to be fair. I was only 80 kilos playing, but so I do all right. I do all right. I'm an average amateur. Let's put it that way.
Humble. That's why you're significantly different to me when you talk about the exercise stuff. But tell me a little bit around the exercise stuff. I think I know, but because it's Mental Health Awareness Week, and we're going to talk a few bits around that, and we're going to talk about other stuff as well, but we may as well bring that in now, because the thing that I've noticed after rugby is the number one thing I need in my life is exercise in order for me to get through the day, in order for me to find a little bit of balance, to find a bit of focus and ease. Is that one of your main drivers? Has it been one of your main drivers, or is it just because you find yourself good at it and it's something that you've grown into?
Massively, finding something to do after retiring, that was a huge focus for me. I remember when I said I was going to retire, I had all these plans of doing bugger all for weeks and months, and I think it lasted about 4 days where I was just bored out of my mind. I think I was just so used to training or pushing myself or focusing on something that when I didn't have that, I was pulling my hair out. And I just looked for something to do out of my comfort zone. I kind of tagged along on the charity side of things, treks or runs or or bikes. And I slowly started, you know, to enjoy it. It was completely out of my comfort zone in the sense that, look, when I was playing rugby, I was a sprinter. So, you know, I could run from 0 to 40 metres pretty sharp, 100 metres, not bad. But anything over like 2 or 3K, you know, I would just gas. So as soon as I got, kind of got invited to do things like triathlons and marathons or half marathons, I just thought, wow, look, Shane, this is an opportunity for you to do something that's, it's going to be very hard for you, but also it'll keep you focused. It'll keep you doing something that, you know, you're not used to doing. And hopefully that will, but, you know, that will kind of make time up, I suppose, rather than worrying about, all right, okay, you're not training today, so what else are you going to do? So it was just completely different to anything that I've ever done. And I slowly found that, you know, I was really pushing myself. I was keeping fit at the same time. And I suppose mentally I was happy. You know, I was in a place where, you know, if I did go out on a bike, I could go out on a bike with a couple of mates. We could have a couple of coffee stops. You know, that banter continued from what I used to have in the rugby life. And then when I did do triathlons, whether it be a sprint or an Olympic distance or an Ironman or a marathon, I still had that kind of competitiveness going. Even though I knew I was never going to win these kind of races, you know, that was never going to happen. But at the same time, I was still competing. So it just kept me focused and kept the brain ticking along nicely, really. And I'm still doing it, you know, 7 years afterwards. So, you know, it keeps me going.
And you look great doing it. And something that a lot of players, both when you're coming to the end of your career, and we talk about transition, and then obviously the transition and going through that a bit, about trying to find out who you are, purpose, money, all these things, and belonging, community, all these things that is spoken about when you're coming towards the end of your career, that ex-players spoke about when they retired, and you think, oh yeah, okay, I should be okay. Will I be okay with this? All these questions. And I think it takes a while, doesn't it, to come to the point of understanding what that transition period is like. I mean, I've been 4 or 5 years now, and only now can I look back, and I hate using the word tough, and it's been a tough 4 or 5 years, but it has, in terms of trying to find the purpose. And I find it probably heartwarming is the word, listening to yourself. And I think more recently, even Dan Carter and Richie McCaw talking about that transition and retirement, because people will be listening to this, Shane, and we both had wonderful careers. Yours significantly better than mine, but I still had an unbelievable career, did really well with everything that was kind of given to me there. But I still found it tough. And I've done well after, in terms of I found a bit of a purpose. And one of the things that you spoke about, and we're going to speak about now, one of the things I really struggled with and still struggle with now is the loneliness, being on my own. So from being in a team environment, yeah, which I realise now was the number one thing that I valued. I didn't realise that when I was in it, but that was the number one thing that I valued looking back. And I've struggled massively with being on my own, and something has been a big shift. Initially, I tried to use it as a personal development mechanism, as in, let's be uncomfortable trying to migrate through this. Yeah. Just talk to us a little bit about how you went through that transition and how difficult it was at times.
Yeah, massively difficult. One of the things I really was worried about when I was going to retire was, you know, going from a team environment in which I spent over 16 years in, you know, from becoming a professional rugby player to getting into the team, to getting into, you know, changing teams, playing for other teams, getting in the national side, Lions tours, rugby tours, World Cups, etc., where you spent almost every single minute of that day with somebody else or a group of other people. To, you know, when I was coming to the end of my career, and I knew I kind of planned ahead, I planned a year where I could kind of think, right, you need to start preparing now for this retirement malarkey, because, you know, you've been looked after for such a long time. Let's be honest, rugby players, we do get mollycoddled sometimes, and you know, you're told where you're training, you're told what you're going to be doing, you're told what to eat, you're told where you're playing on the weekend, you're told where you're going in the summer, and that's how it's been, and you kind of just float through it. But then, you know, the realization hits in when, you know, right, okay, you've retired now on the Saturday, maybe after one big game, on Monday morning, you've got to deal with all this. Everything that comes now, from now on in, is you on your own. And, you know, maybe that bubble of your family around you. You know, you don't have a mate to kind of ask on Monday morning during breakfast, hey, mate, how do I do this? Or I've got a problem with this. Can you give me a hand? That's that almost kind of gets taken away from you. It's very daunting. It's very scary. And I was petrified because I'd always had, you know, 30 or 40 other lads around me that, you know, could solve my problems for me or help me out with anything that was going on and off the field. So that was really, really frightening. I'm a person that, to be honest with you, that enjoys spending time on his own. I do. I like my own company sometimes, but that might be for an hour and a half or 2 hours. You know, when you're ready to retire, you realize that you're going to spend a lot of time on your own as an individual rather than collectively as a teammate. Then really, so yeah, it's frightening. It is hard, and it took me a lot of time to kind of adjust to, because you know there were players within that squad or in that team that I'd spent over 10 years with. You know, lads that knew me better than I knew myself, and all of a sudden, they're gone. You know, they've either moved. I moved to Japan initially to retire. Boys went over the bridge to England. Some boys went to France. Some boys stayed in the club I was leaving. So yeah, it's a difficult one really, because you and the most biggest thing for me was I wasn't prepared for it. How do you prepare on being on your own and having to deal with things on your own now rather than having the teammates around you? And it takes time. I'm probably still adjusting. I still kind of try and get a hold of the boys for a catch up, either for a coffee or a beer, just for the sake of having a coffee and a beer with the lads I used to play with, you know, and having a bit of banter. And in fact, on Saturday, I was at the Ospreys game against the Dragons, and we had a couple of the old farts get together, you know, the old Osprey boys, you know, just for a beer in the lounge there, and that just felt so great, you know. Just
nothing's changed.
Chew the fact that nothing's changed. You know, that they were still taking the mick out of each other as they were 10 years ago. The banter was still the same. It was still the crap jokes, you know, and I absolutely love being part of that again. So it's, you know, I think that's important as well, keeping in touch with the people that you've been so close to over the years, and just, you know, just making sure that they are there for you. And the important thing is they are there for you. They will always be there for you, you know. When being a team member or a teammate like that, is people don't realize how important they are to you and you are to them. So, it's difficult. It has been tough. It really has been tough. And I think lockdown probably magnified that by 10 as well, because, you know, you're not only away from your teammates or your ex-teammates, you're away from everybody else as well. So it is hard. It is very difficult. But I suppose going back to what I do with the triathlon and running marathons, or being part of a crowd, or being part of a team, or competing, you know, amongst a couple of hundred people for a sprint triathlon, is, you know, kind of keeps me within that team environment again. Even though I don't have my boys around me anymore, I still have people that I know, or I have people that I can compete against, and it keeps my mind focused and ready on for the next chapter, I suppose.
Yeah, because I think people will be listening to this and it's not us having a moan, right? This is reality. And I've got a few mates who work in a factory in Coventry, and they're the most content humans ever. And they've been on the same path as me in terms of they've got two kids or three kids. I've got four kids because I'm a topper. But they have been on the same kind of path from a family perspective, and they're very content. You know, they go to holiday to Tenerife once a year. They watch the football down the pub on a Sunday. And that I'm envious sometimes because of how content their life is. And people will be listening to this and being like, oh, yeah, but you got to do this, you got to do that. One of the biggest things for me was in the retirement process, I was really looking forward to being at home and spending some time with my kids because of the things you said, because you'd go on a summer tour, you'd go on a World Cup, you were gone 5-6 days a week. And when you're at home, you were tired and you were battered and bruised. But I felt a bit of a spare part at home after a couple of months. Do you know what I mean? That I was at home too much. I was there every school drop-off, which is great, every school pickup, which is great. But there comes a point where that existence of being, I was 34, right? 34 years old, massive, do you know what I mean? And a dad and a husband. But I felt a bit kind of worthless, you know? Whereas before, it's dad, a rugby player. You know what I mean? They're young. Like, I'm telling them he's a legend. Yeah. You know, he's a rugby player. I'm this. They're watching me at the weekend. And not many people get that in their lives that we've had, but you become a thing to your kids. And people like my mates who work in the factory in Cov, what does that do? He goes to work, they look up to him, he goes to work, he earns the money, And then suddenly, not that we're not earning money, but I just felt like I was at home too much and I wanted to be something more for my kids than being who I used to be, you know?
Yeah, yeah, definite. I certainly felt like a spare part. Because let's be honest, you spend so much time training and trying to be good at something that is very unique, first of all. But then when you are pretty good at that and people kind of notice you, it's a great place to be. It's brilliant. And I've loved every second of it. Highs and lows, brilliant. But then, like, I found that as soon as I was retired, that I wasn't that skilled at anything else. So you lose that kind of I felt like I lost that importance. Now I'd played 87 times for Wales and Lions tours, whatever. Then I refer to it the Monday, because it felt to me like I retired on the Saturday and Monday was just this whole new world to me. On the Monday morning, like, obviously, yes, being with the kids was great, but then I just felt that, like, hold on, what else am I actually good at? I spent so long trying to be a very, very good rugby player that have I neglected everything else? What skills do I have now? And am I even relevant to anyone anymore? And that was in the space of a weekend, you know? And so you have to kind of find the direction you want to go. And also, I felt like it was like going back to school. Right, what am I good at? What do I need to become good at? What are my skills? What are my qualifications? You know, what's my CV look like away from rugby? Pretty average, to be honest with you. You know, and so what do I do now? So, you know, it's very scary. And you know, I started trying to, new businesses. I started starting businesses and I thought, Shane, you don't actually know anything about this. How are you going to be any good at this? And how is this going to be a success for you? Because there's thousands of people out there doing what you're doing and they've been doing it for years, you know? So I felt completely irrelevant for a long, long time until you do start to find your feet. You do have people around you that can help you in the business world or in the sporting world. And then I got to the point where I thought, right, well, just use your rugby values, you know, your determination, your pride or anything. It is just to try and get on in this business life and see how it goes. And, you know, I'm lucky. I have had people around me that have been able to help me, but, you know, it's just a different world altogether. And even now, I've been retired a long time, 7 years I came back from Japan. I'm still looking at myself sometimes thinking, oof, what am I doing? You know, are people looking at me thinking, oh, this fella, right, okay, he used to play rugby a lot and he's pretty good at that, but what the hell does he think he's doing in this kind of business or life now, you know? I still get a bit sketchy when I get into business meetings because people probably are looking at me thinking, well, you're just a rugby player, really, and, you know, what you know in this life. So it's intimidating, I think the word is. It's very intimidating because most of the time I don't know what I'm doing, if I'm honest. And it's scary and it's frightening, but, you know, you've got to have a go at it.
Not just a rugby player, one of the world's best rugby players. You downplayed it there. It's a difference, you know?
Well,
a long time ago.
No, it was a long time. But yeah, look, exactly that, Jim. You know, I trained my ass off try to be the best at what I did. And, you know, I went through it all. I went through, you know, being told I wasn't good enough, getting in teams, being dropped from the teams, getting abused in the press, getting abused by supporters because I wasn't good enough, to, you know, getting back in the team and then becoming the best of what I did. And, you know, it was hard work. It was, looking back, it was great. It was awful times as well where things didn't go well for myself, injuries or non-selection or, like I say, abuse. to get into euphoria, you know. I became World Player of the Year. When you get to World Player of the Year, Jim, there's nowhere after that, you know, and that was a scary place to be as well, because I thought, well, you know, it doesn't get any better than this.
Now,
you know, the only way is down. And, you know, even though you are a rugby player, you're doing what you enjoy, you do what you love, you still get lonely, you still get scared, you still get intimidated, you know, you still get your bad game, you still get the press telling you you're awful or you've had an awful game, you still get knocked out of World Cups in pool stages, quarterfinals or semi-finals, you know. So you get the same pain and anguish that any other person does as well. But like you say, I've got friends as well that you know, I do jobs different to me, and go through the same problems. Still, you know, get lonely, intimidated in work, find it hard, find it good sometimes. You know, miss the camaraderie and the crack of, you know, work or even football or rugby or other sports where they've retired at the age of 30 because they need to earn the money rather than play sports on a Saturday and Sunday, and they miss it, and you know, they've got the same issues that myself, you do, and the likes of Dan Carter, Johnny Wilkinson, Brian O'Driscoll, you know, everyone goes through it really, and people look sometimes and just think, oh look, no look, they've had a great life, it's easy. It's not easy for you know, for people out there, and it's certainly not easy for sportsmen or people in the military or people you know, doing anything, footballers. All right, they're earning 500-600 grand a week, but I can promise you they're not entirely happy all the time, 24/7.
That's the thing, Shane. Money isn't the thing. I know when you've got money, it's easy to say money doesn't make you happy. It's easy to say that when you've got it. I look at Johnny Depp and Amber Heard, where I'm looking at, I'm like, this is tragic. That it's we're talking about two of the most successful youngsters as they came through Hollywood. It's harrowing. And one of the things as well you mentioned there, that again, you know, we're in the age category as men, and we know that mental health is unbelievable in our age group. And again, I'm not here to talk about what the age groups are, what the symptoms and stuff like that, but just we are in a vulnerable category in that sense. And one of the things you mentioned where I actually can see when you're at the highest of the highs, and you've had higher highs than that, because the only way is down. And a coach said to me, Dean Ryan, actually, one of the most successful Scotland coaches I ever had, an Englishman for one Six Nations. We had our highest finish, third. And I remember him saying, how far are you willing to push yourself to win something? Like, how far are you willing to push yourself for 20 seconds of ecstasy, of emotion that no one or hardly anyone will ever feel? I remember when...
Yeah.
I won a European Cup for Saracens. I actually played in that game for 20 seconds and I felt it, but it was the Premiership where Saracens played Exeter and I came on and made a difference in the game. I got a turnover. I thought I did anyway. I definitely got two and sacked a line out as well. And I felt like I'd been a part of something, right? And I remember the final whistle going and that 20 seconds of euphoria was like something I'd never experienced before. I'd had many experiences as a player. And at that moment, I was like, that's what he's talking about. That feeling of, I imagine for you, winning a Grand Slam, winning a match for the Lions. And that's the thing, I think, trying to replicate that feeling. You'll never be able to replicate it. Like I got goosebumps talking about it, like playing for an international team, standing in the tunnel and running out. Or for you, getting the ball in your hand in space against Scotland and shutting down the stadium when it was called the Millennium Stadium to beat Scotland in a game that you should never have won. And I think that's the thing is... You've had them emotions. I've had them emotions. People in the military who've been to war and they've had these experiences of like more adrenaline rush than any human being could ever imagine or wish for. And I think that's the fall that we struggle with.
100%. People ask me all the time, "What, you know, what do you miss rugby and what do you miss about it?" Well, look, I miss the lads, of course I do. And I miss the crack. I miss the banter. I miss playing. But I've experienced things on the rugby field that I'm never going to experience again. You know, up highs and lows. Lows, losing in a semi-final of a World Cup where, you know, we've had a player sent off, knowing that, you know, we are in a good position to win the game and go into a World Cup final and be a world champion. You know, that was like a punch or a kick in, punch in the guts or kicking in the nuts. You can have that quote, by the way, Jim.
I'll take that. I like that.
I felt then that my whole world was falling apart and that was one of the, you know, the lowest times of my life. And, you know, I look back and think, well, Shane, there's a lot worse that could have happened to you in life. So, you know, that's fine. But then I look at euphoria moments, you know, scoring my first try for Wales in the Millennium Stadium, the whole crowd going nuts, you know, in my second cap. Again, goosebumps time, brilliant. But the one that stands out for me was, you know, my last game for Wales against Australia at home at the Millennium Stadium. I score a try in the final seconds of the match. Right? Wales lose the game anyway, so the try's irrelevant, right? But I just remember after scoring that try, thinking, oh, Shane, this is amazing. You know, you've got your kids on the side, you've got a full capacity stadium, you've got all your family here. everyone standing up for at least 15, 20 minutes after the game, just chanting my name. And, you know, I had so many mixed emotions. One emotion was, this is amazing, Shane. This is fantastic. This is brilliant. But then straight away, I thought, Shane, you're never going to get this again, Nick. You're never going to feel like this again. You know, you're going to have great things that are going to happen in your life after this game and this next 10 minutes of your life, but that's it. You're not going to get it back, mate. And so I just remember thinking, Jesus, do you know what? I'm never going to get this feeling again. I'm never going to sing in front of an anthem in front of in the stadium. I'm never going to kind of have that emotion of docking that ball down in the final seconds and having my kids run on the field with me and, you know, and looking up in the stand and the crowd were there. The full crowd were there for about 10, 15 minutes after the game. Wales has just lost the game, right? Usually, as soon as Wales have lost the game, the crowd goes, whew, they're all in the pubs. They're all, you know, drowning their sorrows, but they were there chanting my name. And honestly, I got goosebumps now thinking about it. But then I thought, well, that's it, Shane. What, you know, you're mid-30s. Are you ever going to have anything like this again? And the answer was no. So, it's just a bizarre feeling, really. And, you know, I think the only way I can kind of get anything back close to that now is when I, you know, when I do my marathons or I do my Ironman, where, you know, you get a London Marathon example, you got millions or hundreds of thousands of supporters there in London kind of cheering you on, screaming your name. You know, that's never going to be the Millennium Stadium for
you're
me.
Not winning it either, are you? That's the, no, no. That's the thing. If you're at the front, then yeah. Maybe. You'd probably be close to that.
Coming 34,000 doesn't really cut it, really, does it, as to winning a Grand Slam. But I still get a bit of that back, you know? And I still get a bit of that kind of team spirit back. And there's someone running past you, giving you a tap on the back and going, come on, Shane. You know, you're thinking, oh, how does he know me? Well, it's just got your name on the back, you know? But I'm thinking, oh, thanks, mate. You know, or people cheering you on in the crowd going, come on, Shane, you can do this, where you're 20 miles in, you're blowing out of your backside and you just think you're going to keel over, you know? But I think that's why I do what I do now as well, to be honest. Ironman Wales, I've done that 4 times. It's the hardest physical thing I'm ever going to do. However, you know, I've got a lot of support there because obviously there's a lot of Welsh there. It's a town that I know very well. There's over 40,000 spectators cheering you on. And that kind of almost takes me back a little bit, back to the Millennium Stadium, and gives me that kind of buzz again. Even though it's the most horrendous, hardest, toughest physical thing that I'll ever do, you know, I still kind of get that back as well. So I think that's why, you know, more I talk to you, Jim, more I realise that's why I'm doing these kind of challenges and things as well. It kind of takes me back a little bit, back to the good old days.
This episode is brought to you by Lincoln in the all-new 2024 Nautilus Hybrid, featuring a customizable 48-inch panoramic display, available Revel audio system, and available perfect position front seats with active motion massage. Oh my God, the world isn't wide enough. Visit Lincoln.com to learn more. Some models, trims, and features may not be available or may be subject to change. Check with your local retailer for current information. Lincoln and Nautilus are trademarks of Ford or its affiliates.
Calling all podcast fans, Spotify makes it easier than ever to discover new shows to love. Get personalized episode recommendations and easily preview them before you dive right in. Find exclusive video episodes from your favorite hosts and guests. And with some, you can even connect with them through polls and Q&A directly within their episodes. It's everything you want in one app. So what are you waiting for? Try the podcast experience today on Spotify.
This episode is brought to you by Hotels.com. I was traveling internationally last year. I was in Mallorca. I didn't know the island well. I said, let me head to the north, head towards the water. Let me go on Hotels.com and see what they have available. Something preferably on the beach, maybe even a gym. Not only did I get those things, there was a kids' session with exercise, gymnastics in the water, pony rides, a train. It had everything, and I didn't even want any of those things. But at least I knew they were there just in case I changed my mind. And now finding the perfect hotel has never been easier thanks to the Hotels.com app. Whether you're looking for a family-friendly, right, all-inclusive, or a relaxing spa weekend, you can find exactly what you need and compare hotel prices, ratings, and amenities side by side. So start planning your next getaway and find your perfect somewhere in the Hotels.com app.
Yeah, absolutely. How is your wife in all this? And I say that because me and my wife, we're quite transparent with each other. I wear my heart on my sleeve. I'm a talker at home, so I talk about my feelings and my emotions. But I do wonder sometimes where, you know, she's been with me since I was 20 years old, right? So she's seen me go from a council estate in Coventry to Leicester to become an international, to finish at Saracens and be able to provide for our four beautiful kids. You know, I'm also quite happy to say I'm an alpha male, like I am. I like that. I like being able to provide. I like, you know, the physical aspect of playing a contact sport and all these things, to the point where, you know, a year of retiring, 2 years of retiring, I felt like a shell of my former self. And I wonder how my wife saw me. Do you know what I mean? She's been through these experiences, looked after, pampered, World Cups. You know, that's her husband. That's her boyfriend. There's something around that, being on the pitch, you know, and her seeing that, to then me being a shell of my former self and seeing me wandering around like I am not even half the man I used to be. And you talk about support, and this is probably what it comes on to now, in reaching out for support and being out open and talking. How's your wife dealt with your transition?
Yeah, I've known Gail a long, long time. We started going out when I was 18 and Gail was 17. So we've known each other a long, long time. She understands me really well. And the rugby life was easy because, you know, I knew exactly what I was doing. I was, you know, she kind of understood the rugby side of it. I had World Cups to go to. I had Lions tours. I had Six Nations where you were away for 6-7 weeks, tours, et cetera. So she kind of dealt with that and was fine. But I think she was probably more nervous than I was when I did come to the point of retirement, because she knew, like I said earlier, I hadn't really had anything else. You know, from a very young age, rugby was all I really had. And she knew how hard I trained and how hard I worked to get what I did. But, you know, when I knew that dreaded day of retirement was coming, I think we collectively as two kind of looked at each other and thought, right, then what happens here? You know, when I retired, I kind of went into my shell a little bit, because I was worried. I was worried about, you know, how me and Gail were going to be in a whole different world. You know, she had been in my rugby world for over 15 years. And now I was in, you know, the family and business life, which is chalk and cheese, of course. So, it was very difficult for her. And straight away, you know, I think I was in the house for about 3 or 4 days after retiring, and she was like, "Shane, you just got to get out. You've just got to get out the house and do something. Just get out from below my feet. I don't care what it is. Go down the pub if you want. I don't care. Get on the bike. Do something different. I don't know. Because I was just, you know, I was just pulling my hair out, just sitting there, just thinking, right, okay, relax, do something different. But I just couldn't do it. I couldn't relax. I couldn't sit down. You know, I was getting on her nerves almost instantly from that, you know, that 24 hours of retirement. She's great. You know, she's known me a long time. She probably knows me better than I know myself. And, you know, she's been so supportive. There's a lot of wives out there now, and I know a lot of them because my mates have got them, that are like, "You're not doing an Ironman. No, you're not doing an Ironman. There's too much training involved. You haven't got time. You've got work." Whereas Gail told me, "Go and do an Ironman. Just bugger off. Go and, I don't know, don't care what, if it might be a trek in Peru, it might be a cycle around the Coromandel Bay, just bugger off and do it, because otherwise, you know, me and you are not going to get on." So I'm very lucky in that sense, Jim, because there's not a lot of wives that are that supportive, really. And I've got a lot of mates that are, you know, begging and pleading with their wives, "Please, come on, just give me a bit of spare time to train for an Ironman or a marathon." So she gets it, and I'm very lucky in that sense.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, the support network that we both have, which many people don't have. And I think people listening to this, it isn't us bearing our soul for the sake of bearing our soul chatting to each other. It is Mental Health Awareness Week, and people suffer with all types of mental health. It can be extreme, it can be low, it can not even be a mental health issue. It can just be feeling low or feeling sad. And we're talking about our experiences, because there's a mental health element to that, because mentally our lives have changed and we've had to go through that process. And you speak about the support network that you've had with your wife I'm the same. And a lot of people don't have access to them tools. And it won't necessarily be if they've played sport. It could be troubles at work. It could be money problems. It could be anything and everything. And I think on the rugby pod, when we've talked about mental health or we've talked about feeling low, when we did it during the pandemic, you know, and there was all this kind of hysteria at the beginning that lasted for 18 months. And me and Goody spoke a little bit about how tough it was being at home with the kids and, you know, family members being poorly with it, et cetera. My wife losing her mum and going through that process during COVID. And when we were quite open and transparent about it, the feedback we got was amazing. So I think people listening to this, Shane, and listening to yourself talk about it, one of the best players to have ever done it, and, you know, an icon in Wales, I think it's extremely powerful. But just why are we talking about this? It is to raise awareness, but just tell us a little bit about why you specifically want to talk about it and this week as well.
Yeah, well, obviously it's a very important week for it, but for me personally, I've experienced lows, anxiety. You know, I can't say specifically that I've been depressed, but I've had times where, you know, I've really struggled. And I've probably mentioned the biggest times is retirement and not having that, you know, the player support around you that you're used to. The world's a scary place. It doesn't matter if you're a Jim Hamilton, 6'8" or whatever it is, Jim, or you're a Shane Williams, 5'6". If you're a rugby player, football player, you know, in the armed forces or working in a factory down the road, we all get frightened of things. We all get anxious of things. And there are things out there that scare us and that, you know, we're unable to do. And I just think it is really important. I've got friends that have suffered massively, especially, you know, recently through the pandemic, lost jobs, lost family members. I've lost a lot of people, in fact, that I know. And it was a very scary time for everyone. And, you know, I get anxious, not only for myself, but for my children and my family and the people around me. And in fact, I've lost people over the years to depression. And what I mean by that is suicide and so on and so forth. So it's a huge part of life, and it is something that affects us all. That's the scary thing about it. But I think the most important thing that I've done when I've been feeling down or I haven't been feeling too well is just speaking to someone, you know, having that support around me, family members, ex-rugby players, new friends, friends of old, just having a chat to anyone really to make sure that, you know, we're supported and you could support someone else. So I think it's just really important that, with, you know, it's addressed and that everyone's okay. You know, it's easy to chat and it's easy to sit down and have a coffee or a beer or even just to sit down with each other and have a chat about it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think for the people listening to this as well, this isn't saying go out there and do the Welsh Ironman. I can't. I can barely run 5K. Yeah. But I can say exercise for me is the number one tool. Is the number one tool for me for clarity if I'm feeling aggressive, you know, anxious and all these things that you put into the melting pot for the stuff that me and Shane have spoken about. I find exercise as a great tool. My poor wife, she gets moaned at if there's any issues at work or stuff that's going on, like admin and travel and all these things that I struggle with trying to get focus. And I think there's a million other things. I'm not an expert, obviously. You know, Shane,
no.
You're not an expert. We're sharing our story, I suppose, and some of the tools that you've used. But where can people go to? Where can they reach out to for the charity and the foundation that you're working alongside to raise profile for this?
The charity I'm working with at the moment is, in fact, a cancer charity. It's Philindra Cancer Centre, and that's a charity that I'm ambassador for. And again, that's another avenue that helps me massively. You know, I associate myself with these charities because I feel like I'm making a difference. I feel like I'm helping others, and at the same time, it does allow me to go out and train and run and do a bike ride and do a marathon in aid of Velindre and so on and so forth. But you know, it doesn't even have to be anything sporting. It could just be something. It could just be a sponsored walk. Everyone's different, and like you said, you know, sport's been very important to me for the years, and it was just an easy avenue for me to get into to do these cycles and so on and so forth. I think it's just keeping yourself busy, really. It's doing something you enjoy doing that that takes your focus off all the other things that are clouding your mind and your judgment at times, really. So, and that's why I do it. You know, I'll continue to keep it fit and healthy as I can, because that makes me feel good. And, you know, whether it makes me feel good for an hour or 2 or 3 hours, I don't know. That's how it is for me.
Well, I think the message to people listening is you're not alone. We're all going through something, whatever that looks like, whatever that may sound like when we're talking about it. So we're all in it, all in this together. Shane Williams, that was fantastic, mate. We could have gone on forever. And next time we talk, I want to talk to you about the demise of Welsh rugby. So we're going to have to get you in the studio and we'll go over that. That could be a 2 or 3 hour podcast.
Yeah, how long have you got? How long have you got, Jim?
Next time. Shane Williams, thank you very much. Absolute legend, as always.
Cheers, Jim. Top man.
This episode is brought to you by Empower. You got money questions like, can I retire early? What are my best savings options? Can I afford to pay for my kids' education? Luckily, Empower has all the answers. With Empower's real-time dashboard and real live conversations, you get clarity on your real-life financial goals. So join 18 million Americans and Empower what's next. Start today at empower.com. Tap the banner or visit this episode's page to learn more. Sponsored by Empower, not an endorsement or a statement of satisfaction by a client.
This episode is brought to you by Hotels.com. When I went on my last holiday to Cape Town, it was amazing. My friends were there, the weather was phenomenal, and most importantly, the food was fantastic. But one thing I struggled with was finding the right places to stay. You know, all I want is a great bed, a fantastic shower, and breakfast that doesn't end at 8 a.m. I'm on holiday, I'm still sleeping. I also like ease, and the Hotels.com app easily helps me to find a perfect hotel for every trip. Whether you're looking for a family-friendly getaway or a relaxing spa weekend, on the Hotels.com app, you can compare up to 5 hotels side by side. Now, why would you want to do that? So you can see prices, amenities, and star ratings. And best of all, you don't have to switch back and forth between options. See? Ease. So, start planning your next getaway and find your perfect somewhere in the Hotels.com app today.